But do you think that one of the reasons why politicians attacked the department was just because you had these white powers and certain speculators could never know what sort of price they would be charged for the land they had cultivated?
Well, that's probably true. Now, there was a land commission.
In the mid-1920s, there was a land commission.
Oh, I think wasn't there one later than that? At any rate, at one stage, it was decided, I think this was when Selenaik was minister, in the Donemore stage.
Mm-hmm.
It was then decided that these lands should be divided according to the inheritance. And they had a right of appeal to the governor.
Mm-hmm.
I forget whether that was an amending ordinance or a special land ordinance of that time, but there was that change. In other words, it wasn't so completely at the discretion of the land settlement officer.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you gave a brother 20 acres, there was then a right of appeal if another brother with an equal similar claim didn't get 20 acres, whereas in the old days there wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's considerable danger in having this sort of appeal because it, tends to further litigation and quarrels.
Well, it's an appeal to the governor, I mean, which is an administrative matter. Mm. And then I, as settlement officer, would then have to report to my own boss, mm-hmm. I mean, to the governor, why it was settled. I don't know whether you want these digressions on this case, but the northwestern province, is about the worst area for petitions there is.
Oh, I see.
And of course, whenever you settle a village, you've got to remember you'd have the whole village round you in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd get the bad hat. And you'd all say, well, all you get is 1 acre, chum, you see.
Mm.
And would you agree to that? Well, you might, because all the village knew he had any more claim. He was probably lucky to get the 1 acre, if anything.
Mm.
It's signed, and then immediately go off and send a petition to the governor, you see.
Yes, I see.
Well, I used to get a lot of these. I mean, the northwestern province people are, and one went through them. I mean, I'm not saying you didn't make a mistake. If there was, well, you rectified it and then reported the governor suggested amending it sounds. But I used to get so many of these that the settlement officer himself decided to take over one of my inquiries, which I've got scheduled, we'll say, for next month. I remember the name of the village, Bunhepola. And he came along with me, and he and his interpreter conducted the inquiry. I didn't agree with what was going on in some cases, because I knew the village, I'd been round it, and so I came and said my little say, but I think within 5 days he had 90 petitions, government petitions. That was, so I didn't have any more trouble from the settlement.
Who was that?
Archibald.
Oh, yes.
But I didn't have any more trouble from the settlement.
This change you mentioned must have been in the 1920s if the appeal was to the governor.
Well, it wasn't. I don't know whether it was by law or simply administrative dictum, you see, that the settlement should be. I mean, due consideration should be given to the claims by inheritance or something like that. I can't remember.
I've seen a thesis on this.
Well, when was the Donemore? I'm going to give you the dates.
1931 was the Donemore.
I seem to remember it coming in after Selenaik was minister. It was Minister of Agriculture, but I'm not sure on that.
This land commission that they had in the 1920s, it made several amendments, quite often at the instance of these politicians and critics. And did you feel that these changes had hindered your work?
I can't remember the details of that. You haven't got a copy of your anything?
No, I haven't really been able to. There's a 50-year rule, and here you see, and I haven't had the time really to go into it in that
detail. No, I just can't remember the details, because you see, when you say the 1920s, I started my land settlement in 1922, so I don't know whether it was the established principle when I started, you see. I don't remember the change.
Another criticism of the LSD has been that they took so much. This is a criticism which comes from some of the AGAs, that they took so much time to release a village, which they were doing.
Yes, I can understand that. It was a long process. You see, when you got the plans, from the Survey General, you then put a stop on any land activities by the GA,
mm-hmm.
and got the files from the GA. You then inspected the village. You then advertised lands for sale.
Mm-hmm.
I think of what, 6 weeks' notice on the Gazette?
These are the Crown lands.
The Crown, what I said, the lands between 5 and, we'll say, 25 years old, oh. cultivation. And you then published a land settlement notice. Well, all that had to be prepared and put in the Gazette, and it also meant a plan of the village had to be drawn for the Gazette, a rough plan of the thing. That allowed, I figure, what, 2 months? I can't remember, for claims.
Now, was the Gazette in Sinhalese or...?
Sinhalese, English, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what it was, 2 months allowed for claims, then all those had to be settled, then you had to hold an inquiry. Well, not everybody attended the inquiry. Some were sick, some had died. You had to go to court. If a man had died leaving children's heirs, you had then applied to court to have somebody made his guardian. All these processes took a long time. It was sometimes you'd rattle through a thing, you'd finish the thing in a day. Others might take 2 or 3 years. Then if somebody claimed the land against the Crown, he had a court case, it might be years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just one village. I was probably dealing with 80,000 acres of villages at one time, yes, all in different stages.
I can quite see why it took a long time. Just a small point. What did you do about villagers who could not read either Sinhalese or English? How did you...
Well, you went round the village, don't forget, to start with.
So they knew that it was being...
Knew it was being settled. You said, who claims this lot, who claims that lot? And you wrote down their names. And all those people whose names you wrote down were served with a notice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they couldn't read, somebody else in the village could
yes,
read.
Yes, well, that's fair enough. What was the specific...
And they knew what... I mean, they knew the land intimately. The surveyors had been living in the village, surveying, separating, they saw the landmarks go up and that sort of thing.
If you took a long time to release a village, how specifically did it, in what ways did it hinder the AGA?
Well, it meant he couldn't sell any land in that village.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it hindered him very much, I mean, other ways.
Mm-hmm.
But pure, I think that's more a technical... I mean, it did take a long time in some cases, particularly if you had a land case, it might be 7 years before it went back.
Mm-hmm.
Normally speaking, I would say about 2 years would clear the lot, you see, in one area.
From your experience in settlement work in the NWP, did you find that the headman had a lot of land?
No.
Mm-hmm. You didn't feel that the headman...
No, just a minute. The village headman, no.
Yes.
Oh. The Ratamahatmya, yes.
Oh, but he was usually...
But he was a landed proprietor.
And that's why he was chosen as Ratamahatmya.
I mean, I remember I had an interpreter who was paid 100 rupees a month, something like that, and he used to consult me about buying a 300-acre extension to his coconut estates. I mean, he came from the southern part, and he was, I mean, of a Ratamahatmya's, or a Mudler's in that case, Mudler's family, you mm-hmm. see. Who was a clerk learning the government business before he got onto the headmanship.
Oh, I see.
I mean, he was worth about several times more than I was.
I see. No, I was wondering whether this village headman had made a good thing of their position.
I don't think so. It wasn't the village headman, it was more the village shopkeeper, or the man who was sold seed patios.
Mm-hmm. Were these usually outsiders or village men?
No, generally villagers. Mm-hmm. Quite often, and in fact there were some notorious ones in Sabragamur. I mean, he would have deeds in every village round. He'd be the moneylender, you see, mm-hmm. who would get hold of land, I mean, as security.
Yes. Did you feel that many of the villagers were in debt or had their lands mortgaged heavily?
Oh, I think there was quite a lot of it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Crops in particular. Well, it was planted with coconut trees, the tendency was to mortgage the crop.
Mm-hmm. What about Freeman's criticism of the LSD?
I forgot what it was now. I mean,
well, I think he said that they were too strict in granting chain of reserves or chain of permits.
They didn't grant chain of permits at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was right. I think what he said was the land reserve for Ceylon was not enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was probably right in that, because Ceylon cultivation depreciates the land.
Mm-hmm.
You might say that you go to a village and when you say, now how many years do you wait before you recultivate this land? It would rather depend how much land there is, you see. I mean, because as the land gets, there's less land to go for, the more often do they have to cultivate it. And it starts with a 12-year cycle, 10-year cycle, it gets down to a 6-year cycle, it no longer becomes economic. There's rapid deterioration after that.
Mm-hmm.
And it rather depends on how the stuff grows up. So that one had to make allowances for that when you set aside a chain reserve.
So wasn't anything done in answer to his...
there was no policy. I mean, I did quite a lot of giving chain reserves, cattle reserves too.
Mm-hmm. It all depended on the individual LSOs, did it?
Well, no, except that they had to be, in your report, you had to be passed by the senior settlement office as well.
Mm.
But, you see, it's you'd often get you can't take them village by village, because you'd find that villages from one village would chain in another village.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly because years past their families came from there. Well, they had no chain in their own village.
Yeah.
And so one had to map out large stretches of land. I did a lot of that in Hambantota, and giving access ways in for cattle, and
mm-hmm.
seeing they had access to water. I mean, mapping it chain reserve as a large block.
In Hambantota you did it by AGA?
No, I did a settlement office as well down there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you see, the thing I advocated was that I always wanted to set aside a chain reserve, and then I used to recommend to the GA that nobody was allowed in that chain reserve for 3-4 years. Because if that's where there was, I'm talking about the north, where there was other land available, I said let them chain in that other land, which is not chain reserve, for years, to let the chaining grow up. And then you'd get to the stage where it was all of, not equal growth, but cultivable growth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd give 20-acre blocks or 40-acre blocks, whereas it was trying to put it into a proper pattern, whereas now you get 10 acres there, 15 acres there, mm-hmm. and on the map you simply couldn't draw a line and say that's the block this year. But where there was plenty of land available, I was aiming at...
Concentrated cultivation.
Concentrated 200-acre block this mm-hmm. year, 200-acre block that year. It would help for administration because you know which block was being done. It would be one large block, fencing and everything else would be... but that was a thing you had to leave to the GA later on, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a sort of recommendation I used to make in the report.
Yes, I'm very interested to know how far you found that GAs, before you came to Nadia, had, how far their policy had been effective in keeping speculators and others out.
By and large, I think it was fairly good.
Mm-hmm.
But there came that horrible period when the GA couldn't do anything because the thing was being surveyed for settlement. I mean, there was an interregnum when he couldn't interfere. It was because it would take him as long to deal with it as a court case as to wait until the settlement office was dealing with it. It just wasn't worth it, you see. I think so. I mean, I'm just going back to, as an AGA, I mean, but it was much easier for a GA to deal with things when the thing was mapped.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, I think they dealt with it fairly well.
Were there many cases of CQPs? Was that a tendency in your time?
I've only known it in the northwest of France, where I say these people used to apply for a certificate of quiet possession,
mm-hmm.
and then the thing would be surveyed on their behalf, and then either the GA would do it or, in large, complicated cases, the settlement officer used to do it, you see,
mm-hmm.
as a separate thing, you see.
Getting on to wider aspects of policy, was the land policy really thought out at the centre?
Well, it was, because you had a man called the Controller of Revenue,
mm-hmm.
who was in charge of all land, even above the GAs. I mean, it was his policy.
Mm-hmm.
But
Ellis was one.
What?
Ellis was, well, that was before
your
time.
Alexander was the one I knew.
Mm-hmm.
But You see, when you're dealing with these things historically, you've got to take into account changing opinions. Mm-hmm. I mean, policies change with opinions and things like that. I noticed you had a question about the agriculture. Well, at one time, agriculture was centred rather and mostly on tea, rubber, coconuts, not the village agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was earlier on in your...
Well, I said there was a change made. I mean,
Now, for instance, in the 1920s, there was this obvious policy of fostering these cash crops, and therefore selling land to large-scale planters, whether Ceylonese or British. And also,
in
the 1920s. And also, would you say that there was a tendency to try and protect these village smallholders and to conserve the smallholdings?
No, I don't think there was any policy aimed at conserving the smallholder, other than
the LSD's work.
The LSD's work at that time. Mm-hmm. And it was Brain who brought in the change when he became
controller. Yes, I know that.
And it was after that there was much more attention paid to the villager. In fact, you see, GAs, individual GAs, used to protest against the previous system. What happened was, a man wanted, a villager wanted land, he paid a deposit of 3 rupees an acre, but then was served, it was then put up to auction.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the village shopkeeper bought it.
Oh, yes, I see.
The man had no chance of getting it, whereas after Brain's administration, you had what is called a land cut, where you took applications from people, went round. I did a lot of this in Sabrigambo, in Uber. You went to the village or nearby the village, sat down, all the villagers came up and wanted land, you located it next to their gardens or mm-hmm. went round the village again if you necessary, locate them all, you want an extension acre, that land's available, you can have it surveyed and give it to him.
But, and so they were sure of getting this land?
Getting it, but then Brain brought in a new tenure, which was a 99-year
yes.
lease or something like that.
Yes, I know quite a lot yes. about that.
But still, the point was the villager did get his land. I mean, that was the...
So, before Brain's time, AGAs were protesting against this...
Individual AGAs. Mm. When you say AGAs, you've got to remember they're different people.
Mm-hmm.
One AGA would be interested in road development, another would be interested in rice development, Quite. Another would be interested in forest, another in social services. I mean, the emphasis would be different for different people.
Obviously, this was so, but didn't you feel that there was a need for some sort of consistent policy in this field, as in Brain's time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What sort of man was Alexander?
A very pleasant. He was a good administrator of the old school. I don't think he had a lot of imagination. I mean, just like Brain. You see, Brain was
an initiator.
Well, he was a gadfly. I mean, I think. He was in the outer wilderness for a long time
mm-hmm.
because he was a gadfly. He worried people. And I think it's just the same in the army. If you get the real keen, I'm talking about the old days, simpler days in the army, you got the keen soldier, he wasn't welcomed in the regiment.
I mean, yes, I
because
see.
It wasn't the regimental life. But the Brain had a lot of disciples. And
was he conceited?
Oh, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very simple man, I think.
Mm-hmm. And what was the attitude to this question of conflict between planter and villager? Question of plantation land and village land.
Well, now, you mean the conflict between plantation land and village land, or planter and villager?
Both.
Well, they're not the same. I mean,
all right, plantation land and village land.
Well, now the trouble is there, looking back on it, a lot of the plantation, we'll say the tea plantation, they were cultivating land which the villagers did not cultivate, either as chain or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It required a lot of capital to put into developing stony hillsides. But there's no doubt about it that it did get too near the village. In fact, you see estates right down to the paddy field edge,
mm-hmm.
partly because the villagers sold their private land as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no doubt about it that village life was tied down to the plantations, the only means of employment became work on the estate,
mm-hmm.
a bad thing.
Precarious, wasn't it?
No, I think it's precarious.
Well, in the sense that, wage earners, they could be chucked out for indiscipline or anything.
Oh, like yes, it's precarious from that point of view. But there was that trouble, and then the other trouble was that the old system of selling land, I mean, if there was some chain of land, you had two values. A land would be worth 15, 30 rupees an acre to a villager,
mm-hmm.
for village crops. It would be worth 250, even 1,000 rupees an acre for tea or rubber.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that land in the old ways was put up to auction, who bought it?
Well, the planter.
Yes, that's it, you see. And that was the bad thing of the old system.
I was very interested to hear your remarks. You said it was a bad thing for the villager to go and have to work on these estates.
No, not necessarily. I mean, It provides employment. I said it was a bad thing because the estates swallowed up all the land in certain villages, and in some villages in the Kandy district, particularly the tea area, you get the tea estates coming right down to the paddy fields with no land for expansion, no growth, nothing for the villager.
At one stage, wasn't there a policy of sometimes buying back some of this land?
Well, that is more since it became self-government.
It was after 1931.
Yes. I think Brain was doing it a little bit in some kind in Uber, yes, in Kandy.
Yes. What was the general attitude of the civil service to the question of villagers working on the estates, per force or by choice?
I don't think they had an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I think they probably thought the Sinhalese were an unreliable labour force,
mm-hmm.
and therefore it's understandable that the planters imported more reliable Tamil labour force.
Yes.
There again, you've got the two economies. I mean, working the Sinhalese doesn't want a motor car, he doesn't want this, he wants leisure. And so if he can get enough to live on by working 3 days a week, he's happy to sit in the sun. It's a good philosophy, I'm not saying it's wrong.
Yes.
But that is the fact, is that the states could not rely on the local labour.
Yes, that is well known.
I don't know that there's no question of compelling labour. In fact, I only know of one case of compelling labour in the whole of my service, and that was in 1860.
What is this?
Well, this was when they were going to have a railway up to the north.
Yes.
And for some reason, I don't know, the village didn't want the railway, but there was a complaint they couldn't get any labour,
mm-hmm.
to clear the track, you know, the survey lines for the labour. Now the villagers wouldn't do it. I don't know whether it was a quarrel or they didn't like the idea of a railway or what, but they wouldn't do it. So the government agent of the time sent out a message saying that he would inspect the railway trace on such and such a day. Well, then, in those days, Raja Karya had not died down, and so it then became the duty of the villagers and the headman to clear the way for the government agent to walk.
Yes, I see.
That's the last known case I know any.
I know that the Sinhalese never worked very few worked as permanent hands on the estates. But I was wondering what would have been...
Craftsmen, masons and people like that.
Yes. Mm. What would have been the attitude of most AGAs if a villager sold all his land to an estate and in fact became a landless villager?
Well, there wouldn't be any...
any attitude.
I mean, he'd have to get work of some kind to live. I mean, there was no attitude.
Now, I was wondering whether this sort of thing was frowned upon.
Of course it would be, but it was a question we couldn't interfere with him. I mean, the villager, we didn't interfere with the rights of individuals. He had the right of doing that and one didn't interfere with it.
Did you feel for...
wouldn't come to your notice until it had been done, anyhow.
In your case, for instance, did you feel that it was good for the village to have an estate fairly close by, but not too close?
I think it was good.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had experience of that in any of my districts, but, for example, I was in Hambantota, which is essentially a chain of district, mm-hmm. but we had the salt cultivation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now villages used to swarm in from the most remote villages to collect salt horrible job, but it gave them cash. I mean, they didn't work for cash, they didn't get money to buy clothes. It was all done by barter in their villages, and the shopkeeper, they sold their brother's shopkeeper and got things from him, paraffin or whatever it was. And they very rarely had rupees in their possession. And this was the one chance in the year to get cash, to buy things to enlarge their... Mm-hmm. And also to get them out of debt too, for that matter.
Regarding this private alienation by the villagers of their land, did you feel that... did you know of many instances when this had happened to the detriment of the village?
Well, I'm looking round, thousands and thousands of villages, I mean, any village in the estate areas, because there's no more chance of expansion, the whole land having been sold. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's a matter of change of life. I mean, they then become employees or craftsmen or whatever it is. They change them, no longer agriculturalists, except for a little garden. Mm-hmm. But it's not, I mean, one wasn't controlling villages, and then there were individuals and entitled to do what they liked with their own.
Yes, but I was just thinking of the fact that in some other colonies, Gold Coast, for instance, they had this rule of about non-alienation of native land.
Yes, but it also got the tribal rule that it didn't belong to the men to alienate in the first instance.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, yes, that is so. And of course, in the Gold Coast, you've got hardly any estates at all, about two or three, I think, at all, very small ones. Timber concessions, yes, but that's again a right of use it, and the land isn't going.
Yes, to jump to a sort of allied sphere, this question of chain of licenses in areas like Hambantota and Anuradhapura, did you feel that some AGAs and GAs were rather too strict in granting licenses?
Strict in not granting them, you mean?
In not granting them.
Possibly. Mm-hmm.
Because this is Wu's criticism of government's order in the early part of the century, and I think Freeman was making the same criticism. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think I think you've got the theoretical man in the office said this is destroying the land.
Yes, but it was useless land, generally.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, if you look 50-100 years ahead, it probably isn't useless. You've got different methods, fertilizers and things coming in and so on.
Yes, but I don't think the man in the office was thinking in terms of...
He probably was. Mm-hmm. Sorry, yes, we can stop there, I can we break up now?
Yes, okay.
Chainer, weren't we?
Chainers, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, in the dry zone, you said that it would be valuable in 50 to 70 years' time, but was that the chief consideration in the Secretariat?
No, I think... But the Secretariat hadn't got a lot to do with policy, actually. It was the controller of revenue, well, he was the advisor on mm-hmm. policy. I think it was generally accepted that it did spoil the land, and you had all this story of the Dust Bowl in America mm-hmm. and things like that. I think that was uppermost in their mind, that they didn't want to get arid deserts. Mm-hmm. That was what they were trying to stop. And the idea was to wean the peasant cultivator to more permanent cultivation. Mm-hmm. And but that was done, you see, through the Agriculture Department, distributing seed coconuts and all things like that. I mean, they gave that service in quite a lot of areas.
Did the cultivation of coconuts increase noticeably within your...
It's difficult to say. I mean, there were lots of new areas, particularly in the southern province. But equally, there were old areas were dying off. I mean, it...
I didn't know that they were trying this coconuts in Anuradhapura. When you said permanent cultivation, were they...
I said not necessarily coconuts. I mean, that would apply in the southern province more. It depends on the water, I mean, on the rainfall.
Because, you see, where there was no irrigation for rice cultivation, obviously they had to depend on chaina. And one... couldn't be too strict about this.
Well, not obviously, because there are green manures which can be grown, and manuring and things like that. I mean, cultivation techniques could have improved the land. Mm-hmm.
But I say the rainfall was the main consideration, main factor.
Jumping on to another topic with regard to an remark you made, when I asked the question regarding conflict between plantation land and village land, and plant and village, you said it's not the same thing. What exactly?
Well, the plant, I think the plant in the village, if there was any trouble, it was chiefly over unsatisfactory labour supplies. People would work on the estate, then go off for 3 or 4 days. The planter wanted the work done, the villager wanted a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the main source of disaffection. I don't think there was anything very... I don't know of any serious trouble between planters and...
Was there any trouble over cattle trespass?
Yes, there would be that, yes.
Mm-hmm. There was certainly in the 19th century.
I'm sure there was trouble about cattle trespass.
Well, what did the planters do? Did they seize the cattle?
They seized the cattle and make them pay for it, a rupee or whatever it was. I mean.
Did they shoot them?
I don't think so. Mm. They might do, individuals might do after several warnings. It's possible, it's not impossible, I don't know of it.
Mm-hmm. No, it was certainly happening in the 19th century when yes. things were less regulated. And
yes, but I do remember cattle trespass always was a trouble.
And, what sort of man was Freeman himself? Did you know him?
Yes, I didn't know him. I never worked with him,
mm-hmm.
so I only knew I liked him.
Would you say that he was impractical?
It's difficult to say because I didn't work with him at all. I knew him latterly when he was a member of the council and he had certain bees in his bonnet and, as you say, there was right on both sides. I mean, he had right. Friend of mine, Miles, I don't know if you've come across him, G.C. Miles, he worked under him, he was very fond of Freeman, mm-hmm. worked under him, but knew him. But
I don't mind, I'm sort of jumping from topic to topics, odds and ends. While you were working as a LSO, or while an AGA, did you find that there were many peasants who are absolutely landless, say in northwestern province?
You see, you wouldn't... I don't know that you came across them as such, you see. As an AGA, I was an AGA in Uber,
mm-hmm.
dealing entirely with land. I mean, I was a sort of land agent. Well, then I used to hold land cutters. Well, then, of course, I naturally came across the man without land because I was giving land to him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a thing which would... I mean, you get the individual who wouldn't make a claim to land because he hadn't got a claim.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, one always used to keep, if you could, if you weren't setting the whole village private under the 3-to-1 rule, you'd probably keep a few charity acres up your sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're dividing a tract of 200 acres, you can't divide it meticulously.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to allow roughly for roads, access to each individual block so that people aren't shut up, and there's always... You've got to allow leeway of a few acres. What do you try and fit in? At the end, you had a few charity acres for the lands, but there weren't many of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I want to know, whether it was very prevalent or not. And what about in Badgula, when you were dealing with these people, how have they come to be landless? Did they tell
you? Well, it's not... You see, where land was available in Badgula, it was the remote villages, not the ones just round Badgula. I mean, they'd be the villages where there was crown land left. Well, they were landless because their father had the land, they were children, and they couldn't subdivide anymore, so they became landless. I mean, that is the main cause of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's brains...
Right, just as in England, you get the sons and daughters want to marry and get a house, another house. It's the splitting up of the family that does it.
This brain scheme, did you have any experience of its working in the field?
Oh, quite a lot. I mean, I mapped out the whole of the Hammondota district, every village.
Mm-hmm.
Myself.
Under his pieces of tenure?
And no, I mapped it out and then went on to giving land under his tenure. Well, it wasn't very popular. They didn't like it.
Oh, I see. That's very interesting.
Well, it wasn't their own ownership and I don't think they fully understood it. They took it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that there wasn't that pressure afterwards, I think, just about the time I was leaving Ceylon, to have these converted into
freehold.
But I don't know what happened, but I think there was a pressure coming to have it converted into freehold. But they took it because they got occupancy of the land, and as far as they were concerned, it was like leasing the land.
What did you think of the idea in theory?
I thought it good, but it should have been done 100 years ago.
Yes,
it's rather like the African system of not alienating the land. It kept a control, as I say. You see, you had the case, I told you the case of the 1 acre of land where I pulled down the hut.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was under this lease because the land was still Crown. If I'd sold it to the other man, all I could have done was to advise the course to court, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I did it because the land was Crown. He was going on my land, not...
Yes, I see. Yes. And what about in practice? Wasn't it very difficult to work administratively?
No.
Well, when you were sort of had given thousands of these, long leaseholds, whatever they were called, you laid on lots of conditions. Haven't you to keep an eye on them to make sure that these conditions were...
Yes, well, it doesn't take long to do that village by village. I mean, you can't do it. You've got other work to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you see, one would hold what you call a land cut. You'd sit near the village, so near enough that if you couldn't locate a land the man wanted, you could go along early in the morning before breakfast and look at it, I mean, locate it. Well, then equally... A year hence, you can go around that village quite quickly and have a look at the land.
But didn't it...
But I never got to that stage
of checking up
because I was no longer an AGA in the district.
Mm-hmm.
But I did it for paddy, cultivation, where there was a subsidised scheme for the Malays of Hambantota.
Mm-hmm.
When they were paid so much an acre, well, there I used to go around fairly often and pay this ground according to the work done on the land.
Well, I should have thought that it would, in populated areas especially, that it would have involved an awful lot of work for the AGA, who had lots of other work to do, to check on each of these plots and make sure that these conditions were being fulfilled.
Well, when you're inspecting a village for land settlement, you would do something like 90, or it depends on the configuration of the land. I mean, if it was in Sabragamur, where things were going up to the mountains and all, it's quite a different matter. But you'd do an end of a few days, you'd do 90 or 100 lots a day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're not likely to have more than 90 or 100 new lots in a particular village.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the point is, in when I was in Uber, I was the land AGA. My work was nothing but land, so I couldn't...
Now, the purpose of this scheme was to have an economic unit, wasn't it?
To stop
it being subdivided.
Fragmentation.
But what was there to prevent this occupant sharecropping the thing?
There wasn't. I mean, that was the trouble I had with these Malays.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was to decaying civilization, so to speak, in Hambantota, and tailors and tradesmen, relics of the old Malay rifles, to get them on the land to save their souls. Well, half of them were sharecropped with a Sinhalese labourer and were still back in the town.
Mm-hmm.
But when one, by paying surprise visits, one found that out, one got to know them, you see, individually, because of, what, only a couple of hundred perhaps. And one got to know one. And
what happened if they did sharecrop it?
Well, then one stopped the subsidy until he got onto the job.
Mm-hmm, I see. Because apart from sharecropping it to one man, it's quite possible for an occupant of plot A to sharecrop it to 10 and in fact defeat the purpose.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But don't forget that in Ceylon it doesn't, because Ceylon's ruled by petition. If a man did that, there'd be a petition came away in no time.
Oh, I see. Yes,
these people always have an enemy of some kind.
That's true. What about mortgagee cultivation? Did you feel that there was a lot of that?
I don't know. I never had... It didn't come across me administratively at all. I mean...
And what is your personal view of the system of sharecropping?
Well, it's not a bad system. What do you mean by sharecropping? I mean...
Under-tenants.
You see, the usual way... I'm talking about coconut land now, and I think any other land... The usual way is that a landowner gave half or a third of the land for the man planting it up.
Yes, that's right.
And that's not exactly sharecropping. I mean, the man does get title to the land, you see. He gets a half share. That's the more common way of doing of the absentee landlord cultivating land. It was that way.
Or giving the man a portion of land in return for the cultivation.
Yes, yes. That was the commonest way in my time, particularly in the Kirkcaldy area of the Northwestern province.
No, I'm referring really to paddy cultivation in which a man allowed A to cultivate this field, and he got half the crop or something, and they shared the crop. But next year he could give it to B, who would do the same, and tenants at
will. Well, this is a political question, getting on to communism, I think, the solution. Absentee landlords. I mean, it did happen, there's no doubt about it.
What about the depression itself? Do you think that affected the peasantry? The big depression?
Not so much, I don't think about it. I mean, they have a very much hand-to-mouth existence, and I don't think it affected their money. Money didn't mean so much as them as physical goods, barter and things like that.
Well, it's one in Badjula. Did you find in the Badjula Highlands, was Chena still practiced? Or was there land to Chena?
No, Chena was all in the lowlands. You could see the fires from the hills, but there was either T or bleak hillsides. I mean, no Chena there.
So then, what did the villagers in the highlands live on? Paddy?
Well, they probably had paddy or tea of their own in their gardens.
Mm-hmm. So, you see, in the 19th century, Chena was a complementary crop, and it was... while they had paddy, they also had this kurakkan and their garden products. So presumably in some stage in between, they had got used to managing without Chena.
I don't know what the position... Yes, they have, because they got a commercial crop. I mean, tea became a commercial crop, you see.
Even the villages were...
Oh, a lot of small ones.
Mm-hmm. As well, it was like that with coffee. Coffee was coming in the 19th century.
But I think, by and large, there wasn't a lot of Chena there. I mean, in the hills, it was...
I think I really see... Oh, yes. What about this cooperative credit movement in your time, the one started by Campbell in the 1920s?
Well, I think you mean from an agricultural cooperative credit.
Yes,
I think it's a very good thing.
Mm-hmm. What was the peasant response?
It was all right where the village was homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I remember putting up an idea, particularly for these rice people in Hambantota, where I'd got villages from all over the place of different castes and things on adjoining lots.
Mm-hmm.
And I, after about a lot of trouble, got him to agree that I should run a dummy cooperative scheme. In other words, I'd keep it under my control for 2 years, mm-hmm. but going through the motions of keeping the books and having offices, but just to see that nothing went wrong while I was trying to weld them to trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it worked where you had people of the same caste, the same village, or what it was together. Mm-hmm. But the Sinhalese, as a rule, doesn't trust one another commercially.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the main trouble. It's all right if you've got all the people the same type of person as a member of society. I think it did very good work. I mean,
what were the aims?
Well, you see, they would take seed paddy.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have to pay 50%, 100% for loans, whereas they get it for 9 or 10% mm-hmm. through the society.
Would you say that one of the aims was also to reduce indebtedness?
Well, it did, of course, because it meant the man was getting his seed paddy without having mortgage on his crop before he started. If they'd got him clear at any time.
And did you feel, for instance, when you were selling land to villagers, that they had the capital to develop it?
The capital for a village to develop it is a couple of arms and a mammoty.
Manure in certain cases?
You didn't get manure. I mean, they hadn't got around to manure.
Mm-hmm. Then,
I mean, I must admit they should have, but I mean, they have cattle, but they don't bother to collect it. They don't bother with it. They can grow sunflowers in their paddy field and whatnot, they don't bother.
Yes, all right. Then, while he was working on it, he still needed, there was a period where he had to wait it out. So he needed capital for that period.
Capital or savings, which he wouldn't have, but he'd have credit.
Yes, but
I'm talking about the Singleed Villager.
The credit, in turn, could hit him.
Oh, yes, yes.
Until the corporate...
But then, you see, I think the average Singhalese, it has the criteria of good standing if you're in debt. I mean, it's if you've got credit, you must exercise it.
Mm-hmm.
There was no stigma attached to indebtedness, anyhow.
No, there wasn't. Did these cooperative societies undertake anything in the way of rural marketing?
I think there were two or three. I think Kay Gore, I mean, it's outside, it's only just a matter of general knowledge, but I think there was a vegetable